and welcome to today's Raging Bull podcast. We occasionally like to add guest interviews from traders and experts from Raging Bull's Elite Traders Chat Room. In the Raging Bull Elite Chat Room, we hold live trading sessions with Raging Bull's traders, elite members, and our invited guests. These sessions are hosted by our Elite Chat Room host, Hitha Herzog. It's my pleasure now to introduce Hitha and one of our special guests to the Raging Bull podcast.
Hey, Elite Room, it's Hitha Herzog. As I mentioned, I have the amazing, the astute, the awesome Erica Wasserman. She is your financial therapist. She is here again for our weekly chat about money and finances and how to be better emotionally equipped as we talk about trading and as we're making these gains and as some of us are experiencing some of these losses. So Erica, thank you so much for being here with us.
Yeah, so happy to be here. I always enjoy our conversations.
We adore you too. We were talking earlier about what, you know, the subject that we are going to talk about this week. I know we talked about building generational wealth, and what I really loved about last week was kind of how you taught us to create this foundation as we're making money, how we pass on those lessons of making money, but also that emotional foundation as well. Today, we're going to talk about how we talk about our talk with our significant others about the losses we may be experiencing. You know, as you know, it's been a very, very volatile market over the last couple months. It hasn't been exactly an upward trajectory. Some of us are making some money on this volatility. Some of us are not. But Erica, what when we are dealing with our significant others, you know, some of us, and again, Jeff Williams was in here last week talking about how it was really hard initially for him to talk to his wife about days that were bad, that where he had significant losses. She'd want to talk about it, but he was a little bit, you know, apprehensive. How do you break the seal on that? And how do you get the conversation going?
Yeah, well, this is a hard conversation for most people. In fact, 70% of families fight over money. 70% of couples fight over money. And that's above sex, you know, laundry, snoring, you know, the in-laws. So the fact that this is the number one issue in most marriages is not surprising because it's such a sensitive topic. And you just mentioned somebody who's very financially literate, you know, and is embarrassed maybe to come home and show the underbelly, right? The bad days, the vulnerability in having a bad day in the office. And you have to create a culture in your home that is safe to talk. And what that means is that start it on days that it's not volatile. You know, you don't want to come in and say, I lost $100,000 in the market today, and leave the conversation there, because your partner on the receiving end is absorbing that. They're seeing you look vulnerable. They're seeing you sad. But what's also happening is they're thinking in their head, and will say, like, I'm on the receiving end of that. What does it mean to me? You know, like, I had a dream. I thought we were going to go on vacation. I thought we were going to pay off our house. Like, how are we going to send our kids to college? You don't know what the other person's receiving in that message.
Right.
So the important part is have a conversation and start off with on a day and a time that you're both in a good place. Don't do it when the market just cracked. Don't do it on a day that you're flying high because you just made a great deal. You know, find a time and a place that you guys can talk and take the emotion of dollar and cents out of it and talk about experiences and feelings. So come up with, okay, now we have a right time. We're going to talk about what we want and what makes you feel secure. And listen, don't lecture. Just because you're more financially literate in that in your relationship doesn't mean you have all the answers. And right now, everybody is worried about wellness.
Right.
When we talk about wellness, we talk about, you think about eating and exercise and, you know, relationship. But financial wellness is part of that. And when one of those are out of whack, we all of a sudden have a stress and anxiety. And so we work so hard on what we're eating. We work so hard on exercising. But when you walk in the door and the person on the receiving end doesn't know how your day went, and all of a sudden you walk in and you say, I lost money, or the market, you know, had a bad day, that shifts their wellness. That creates anxiety and stress for the other person.
So, So the mission is to make sure that that we don't want to create an environment of anxiety and stress. We also, I know I tend to own these things. You know, I feel like I'm the source of anxiety and stress. So I don't want to put that on my significant other, the anxiety and stress. But Erica, what happens when you're not used to talking about this stuff? I know there are a lot of members, and I think in general, people have a hard time talking about their feelings. And especially when we're dealing with older generations. And I mean, this isn't a diss on the older generations, but I mean, it's true. My mother's generation, they never talk about their feelings. And I even think I'm part of Gen X. We don't really talk about our feelings too much. It's very hard for me. But what happens when you can't really, how do you break down that barrier to just even start that combo?
Yeah, it's practice, like anything, you know, it's going to take practice. So don't necessarily bite off the whole conversation of a retirement fund now looks like XYZ. Yeah. Because the person who is on the receiving end of that doesn't understand what that means.
Right.
So have a conversation of what does our first day of retirement look like? What does your house want to be? Start dreaming together. And then back into those financial conversations where it's, okay, in order for us to get a house in South Carolina on the golf course, you know, we're going to need X amount of dollars. And, you know, if that's your financial goal, every time come up with a plan. So when you do come into the house and say, I had a victory today in the office, because that's what it is, a victory in the office, come up with a plan. And it might be putting 5% or 10%, you come up with it, into that goal, into that dream together. Right. So the other person understands what a victory in the office means to them. Otherwise, we're all putting our own spins on it.
Right.
And the same with the loss, right? Because a loss is devastation. A loss is sadness. A loss is, you know, so when you come home and you say, oh my God, I got crushed in the market today, the person on the other end doesn't know what that means. Does that mean we can't get that house in South Carolina anymore? Does that mean our kids aren't going to college? So in those beginning conversations, kind of map out what those words mean. And also ask your partner what they need to hear. So if I say I had a bad day in the office and I lost X amount of dollars.
Right.
What do you need to hear? And the partner might say, I need to hear we still have money for our house. We still have money for mortgage, you know, to make sure that you're reassuring them, because otherwise you're adding anxiety to your household and in return adding anxiety to you, which in turn causes physical problems, headaches, nausea, heart problems. And now all of a sudden you're spending time going to the doctors for physical ailments that come from stress. And we can eliminate all that by just sitting down and having an emotional conversation with your partner on what their dreams and their goals are.
Which takes practice. Now, I have a couple questions, but I definitely want to open it up to the elites. If you have some questions, please, please, please weigh in. This is obviously, a hot topic. I know that, the markets are kind of, it's a little bit of a low volume day today because it's Friday and it is the last day of trading here in May, but it is an important topic and we want to get to, we want to kind of come out of it with some actionable items here. I know Erica, in my household, I'm being transparent here. Everyone's met my husband. And I think our biggest issue is that we tend to not make a bridge between our finances. And what I mean by the bridge, I guess the discussion bridge. We operate in such separate silos. I often don't know what Seth is doing and he often doesn't know what I am doing, yet we live in the same household and we are paying for things together. So how do you, again, and I know you said it's practice with this conversation, but are there other ways that we can bridge the financial silos?
Yeah, and you make a great point because we're in a society today where we have two income earners and some people are getting married later or second marriages that keep finances separate, but yet you have the same goals. It's going back to talking, right? So you don't want to know what's in your partner's bank account. That's okay. but know what their goals are. So these are the top three things that I'm working and saving for. And do they match yours? Or do they match overall? Is your family goals being matched? So if he's saving for the house in South Carolina and you're saving for college for the kids, you know, are your family goals in line?
Right.
And they're not easy conversations to have. But again, the more you talk about it, the easier it's going to be. And don't necessarily talk, well, I'm putting $500 away. I'm putting $600 away. Well, why are you putting more money away? Don't start pinpointing and making it uncomfortable for the other person because you're not going to get anywhere, because that's your emotion and your frustration building up.
Right.
You know, keep your eye on the ball long term. We're in a situation, especially with the pandemic right now, where people uncertainty is so big. We're uncertain in so many aspects of our life right now.
Yeah.
And just keep the things that are certain. I'm certain that this is what I want and that you're the person I want it with. I'm certain that I want a house over our head. I'm certain I want our kids to go to college. And then come up with plans to make that work. And for me, it might be, you know, I'm trading X amount of dollars every day. But for you, for a sense of security, we need to have, I call it an insurance account, you know, where you have your monthly spend, do it without judgment, be realistic on it, and multiply it out 6 months, 12 months. Or if your partner says, look, we have a lot of expenses, I want 2 years that you don't touch. So when you come home from work and you tell me that you lost, you know, $100,000 in the market, I still know that our lifestyle is not going to change.
Right. So it's really about you're advocating complete and utter the ability to have these conversations and complete and utter transparency here. Any advice on whether, I mean, again, you mentioned how sometimes we are with and married to, you know, someone who it may not be as financially literate as us. So I think, again, when you say something like, oh, well, I lost, you know, $100,000 in the market or I don't know what this is a new service that I just bought and here I am trading in it. How do you communicate to your spouse again that, are there little tools that you could use in terms of financially illiterate, some basic tools that you can use when you're trying to explain that this is maybe not a hobby and this is something that you want to do long term?
Okay. Two things on that. First one is that you need to understand what does it mean to me? Because the reality is, everybody's turning the message. We're all selfish, you know, even if your spouse is your spouse and they love you, it's what does it mean to me? So you're trading, you're day trading, you're thinking about this as a profession long-term. What does it mean to me? How is this going to affect my lifestyle? How is this going to affect our family? Because while you're excited about a new career path or a new service and you're testing the waters with things, at the end of the day, I care about how it's going to impact me. So make sure when you're having conversations, you're listening to the other person and ask them, if I do this, how do you think it's going to impact you? And then return what they're saying to you. So if the person says, your spouse says, it's going to impact me because now all of a sudden we don't have a steady income or we don't have health insurance. Repeat back. What I hear you say is this is what you're concerned about. You're concerned about that we're not going to have health insurance because I'm leaving my full-time job. And then come up with a plan of how you're going to mitigate that.
Right.
So listen and reflect is a great way to handle the conversation, because what your concerns are completely different than your spouse's, which is why 70% of couples fight over money. They're right. Not fighting over the $50. They're fighting over the emotional and the attachment behind it. What does it mean?
What does that $50 represent? That's really interesting. And I love this idea too of it's not necessarily parroting, but it's so, and again, I don't, you know, I these are all techniques that I sort of gleaned from you, but just repeating back to that person so that they are aware that they are being understood, I think is so, so, so important. Erica, we have a question here from Frank in the room. He is saying, Erica, I have the opposite problem. My family has no idea about money. They have never wanted for anything, no matter how bad things get, they get new cars, vacations, and whatever. How do I make my 16-year-old understand that she can't buy a $500 hair curler from Amazon while people are starving during quarantine? How can I make my wife and kids understand that they live in a world that is suffering financially right now?
Great, great question, because it's very true. And so the one thing that I would think about is, and it sounds silly, but there's an exercise and that we could share afterwards that I have, just doing an Excel spreadsheet of having the kids do a budget, right? So if this is how much we make, this is how much rent is, this is how much the average person costs. And that way they get a sense of money. Another thing, when I was working for IBM, I had two executives and they had their kids. So they're doing very well off.
Right.
They still had their kids do a PowerPoint presentation on why he should get a new computer at 16 years old. He had a computer that worked just fine. And as a 20-year-old or 25-year-old, right, I thought that was the craziest thing ever. But the reality was they were teaching him that he needed to show effort and find out why that he needed it. Right. So if she wants to buy the $500 curler, great. But show what the difference is, the pros and the cons. Have her do some investigation into it before she's allowed to make that purchase. And the other thing is, as far as seeing the rest of the world, go out and volunteer. Go take those kids to a homeless shelter, or go take them to a thrift store where people are buying clothes and giving out meals. And all of a sudden your view shifts a little bit. And also maybe another activity to do is, great, here's your monthly allowance, back to your 16-year-old, back to a budget. You need to pay some for taxes, and you need to pay some for charity, and you need some for yourself. So start teaching at a young age that there's more than just yourself in the equation.
I love to, I remember to your PowerPoint point, when I was around that age, my mother made me do a proposal, which I at the time thought was crazy, but now as a parent, I understand. My mom, as elite members know, and Erica obviously knows, is my mom was a single mom, doctor, three girls, raising us all our own. And we would have to write proposals if we wanted to do any sort of big ticket items, such as go on vacation with our friends, or, purchase, a $500 curling iron, or anything that was, I think, above $500, we had to write a proposal for. And I thought it was so ridiculous, but it made sense. We saw kind of how things worked. Did it have a lasting impact on me? And do I still have to work really hard now in order to budget myself? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I still can't get it perfect either, but it definitely had a major impact on me growing up. Erica, going forward then, what are some three takeaways that we can take with us today that we can start putting into practice for this week and until we see you next week?
Yeah. So the first is find a time to sit down with your partner. And in a quiet place, and just ask, how can I reassure you during this pandemic? Don't make it bigger, for our lifetime. Like, over the next 3 to 6 months, what can I do to reassure you that financially we're going to be okay? What do you need? And then you have to listen.
Yeah.
Don't lecture. Listen. Reflect back what they're hearing. And then, if possible, come up with a couple of plans. And again, that could be, look, when I make a gain, we'll put the percentage towards that. Whatever it is, it doesn't have to be a plan that day. Take it back and come back to the conversation. But start talking. Back to 70% of couples fight over money. A great quote I read is, the sand that irritates the oyster eventually becomes a pearl. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you put the time in and the investment back to your 16-year-old daughter, back to your wife, where you feel like maybe it's useless at this point, she already has her habits. Put the effort in, put the time in, because in the long run, you're going to have a stronger relationship and understanding with each other when it comes to these emotional swings in the market, which we all know are going to keep going on. They're not going to, like, this isn't a one-time deal.
Right. So, okay. So awesome. So we'll work on that. as we move forward. And in terms of just, I know you said kind of create a budget or, you know, like have some sort of visual aid. I guess it doesn't, I mean, I know we were doing trees last week, but do you suggest that people kind of even just write it down? I feel like I'm a visual learner anyway. Do you feel that, you know, just even mapping it out visually could help as well?
We all have different coping skills and we all have goal skills. So for like myself, I have a vision board that I keep in my bathroom, you know, because it's the only place that's quiet to myself, right. You know, and I pin up things that I see along the way. You know, for you and your spouse, if it's in your bathroom on a mirror or a post-it note that you keep at your desk, you know, find what reminds you, put in a picture frame if you like that, you know, a picture of Maldives or wherever, you know, your financial goal is. But it needs to be a shared goal that you have with your spouse and that you can come to together. Because doing this on your own, you're not going to be happy and you're alienating somebody who cares about you and somebody who also deals with your emotions when you walk into the house. Right. So you are affecting your person that you care about in a negative way by not sharing. Mm-hmm. By burdening all that to yourself, you're creating much more anxiety and stress within yourself. Because when you share with other people, you're more accountable. Yeah. And also it releases endorphins when you can talk things through with other people and you can come up with solutions a little bit better. So don't do yourself or your partner a disservice by thinking you can do this all on your own.
So get away from the idea that you are a financial silo, more communication. And if you are a more visual learner or that's how you cope, go ahead and map that stuff out on a pad and paper. Erica Wasserman, you are one of my favorites. Oh, and there goes my...
I'm so excited.
I'm throwing stuff around. Erica Wasserman, I adore you, my friend. Thank you for coming in here every week and giving us a little bit of a taste of what you do. If people want to get more Erica Wasserman, where can they find you?
Yeah, hop over to my website, Erica Wasserman, yourfinancialtherapist.com. And my email address is Erica with a K at yourfinancialtherapist.com. And I'm excited to continue our conversation. There's always so much growing and learning that we get to do every week at Raging Bull.
Absolutely. And you know what? This is just another value added over here at Raging Bull. We absolutely cannot thank you enough for coming in. You're everyone in the lead. I will put Erica's information in the chat room for you as well if you want to reach out to her. Erica, thank you so much. I will see you next week. And elites, I will see you in a little bit. We have Donald coming up just shortly to do his training. And so we will see you very soon. Erica, thank you again. We'll see you next week.
Well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks for listening. I invite you to visit RagingBull.com/podcast. That's RagingBull.com/podcast to discover more episodes, to learn more about people who have created, built, and lived successful lives. Also, remember to subscribe to one of Raging Bull's newsletters. Join me on the next episode as we share more stories from our guests on the wisdom behind wealth and how they built their own success. Raging Bull Podcast is brought to you by RagingBull.com, helping traders succeed through education, resources, and where you can watch real traders make trades. Raging Bull, learn to trade. We'll show you how.